From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. Tonight we welcome another news station to the Night Call Network, WMUB in Oxford, Ohio. Welcome to the Night Call Network. And tonight we continue our programming on the political candidates. Sunday night our guest was Vice President Humphrey. To date, Mr. Nixon has declined our invitations to appear on Night Call, and the Nixon National Headquarters has not provided anyone to speak for Mr. Nixon. Mr. Wallace has also declined our invitations, but tonight our guest will speak in Mr. Wallace's behalf. Mr. Wallace, of course, has been making history with his nationwide strength as a third-party candidate. Much of his support seems to come from, and we quote, the little people, unquote, who like his stand on states' rights, local control, law and order. Behind those declared issues, there seems to be a common question. Just who or what group should be running things in this country? Mr. Wallace's campaign has exposed some raw nerves on the American scene. Liberals and conservatives, blacks and whites, have been shown as very separate, divided by distrust and fear. To one group, Mr. Wallace represents courage and strength. To the other, he represents white racism. Standing by in New York City to answer your questions is a stand-in for Mr. C.A. Tex Franklin of Montgomery, Alabama. Our stand-in is Mr. Jim Rupp, who is the chairman of the Courage Party here in New York City, in New York State, rather. Mr. Rupp, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
And thank you for being with us, and thank you for standing in for Mr. Franklin. Mr. Rupp, first, before we ask our first question, you are the chairman of the Courage Party in New York. Now, how does the Courage Party differ from the American Independent Party?
It is just a legal technicality. Technically, it is the same party all over, but due to the law in New York State, we're not allowed to use the word American on the ballot. So, therefore, we had to come up with another name in a matter of 2 days, and we just picked this name out of a hat.
Thank you. Now, sir, what does Mr. Wallace stand for?
Mr. Wallace stands basically for states' rights, freedom of speech, free enterprise system, constitutional government, just the basic principles that this country was founded for. 180 or 200 years ago.
I would assume that all candidates who are in the running run with the declared purpose of winning. Do you feel that Mr. Wallace has a chance of winning?
Yes, sir, I most certainly do. Here in New York, his support has been very strong.
If Mr. Wallace does not win, does this mean the end of the American Independent Party? One of the issues that has been raised, not only by Mr. Wallace, but also by Mr. Nixon, and Mr. Humphrey has also touched on it, is the issue of law and order. Now, what does Mr. Wallace mean when he refers to law and order?
When Mr. Wallace refers to law and order, and this is just my opinion, he is speaking mainly of the civil disorders that have gone on in this country and have been condoned by some of the local politicians in different areas of this country. We've had burning in the streets, rioting in the streets, mass murders, and these things just have to stop. And when he speaks about law and order, this is what he's talking about.
Were Mr. Wallace to become president, how would he deal with this particular issue?
He has said himself, as president, there's not too much he can do in local areas. He can throw his support behind the police departments throughout this country and behind the elected officials in the various states.
Is Mr. Wallace a segregationist?
No, sir, he is not.
He is not a segregationist?
No, sir.
Is the Wallace campaign geared toward white racism?
No, I would say that it is most definitely is not. We have had quite a few Negro people and Oriental people come up here and offer their assistance. And they are volunteer workers working for the Wallace campaign at present.
Is that just in New York?
No, this is throughout the country.
I'd like to ask your opinion of Mr. Wallace's program as regards foreign relations. First, let's talk for a moment about the United Nations. Does Mr. Wallace believe in the UN?
Mr. Wallace believes that the UN is a hoax and has been doing nothing but defrauding this country since its inception.
Would he replace the UN with another organization or a similar type organization? What about gun control, Mr. Rupp? Where does Mr. Wallace stand on gun control?
Again, I say that Mr. Wallace believes in constitutional government. The constitution that formed this country gave the people of the country the right to bear arms. And Mr. Wallace coincides with that. He feels the people do have the right to bear arms. But if guns are used illegally, he feels the people that use them illegally should be punished for it.
One of the very disturbing things in this campaign, which has been touched upon by some of the candidates, is the fact that the entire country seems to be very concerned about the welfare system. How does Mr. Wallace view welfare?
Mr. Wallace views welfare as a condition that must exist. However, he feels that handouts are just making the system worse than what it really should be. He feels that the main thing in welfare should be rehabilitation of the people on welfare, and that jobs should be secured for the jobless.
Early in the campaign, there was a quite a bit of attention focused on the appeal of Mr. Wallace to the law enforcement officials of this country. At his various stops, there was always notices in the newspapers and reports coming through that many of the policemen in the various cities and states seem to be great backers of Mr. Wallace. Why this particular appeal?
Again, this is just a personal observation, but I feel that here in New York, the police have had their hands tied for a couple of years at least. I feel that they're getting a little tired of it, would like a free hand. They're tired of being stood up in the street and have bricks thrown at them and called pigs and every other name in the book.
Tonight, our conversation is the presidency of George C. Wallace. Our guest tonight is Mr. Jim Rupp, who is chairman of the Courage Party here in New York, which, of course, is also the American Independent Party. Mr. Jim Rupp is standing by in New York. He's our guest tonight. And just before we go to our phone calls, a reminder to you that Night Call is your program. We welcome your comments, and, of course, we welcome your conversation collect at any one of our three numbers in New York. Our number is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. If you're calling from the East or the Midwest, our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. On the West Coast, it's area code 212-749-3357. That's area code 212-749-3357. We'll take our first call tonight from Richmond, Indiana. Mr. Hammer is hearing Night Call over WECI-FM. Mr. Hammer?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Your question, sir.
Yes. Throughout his campaign, Mr. Wallace has stressed the great waste and squandering of federal monies through the so-called bureaucrats of the federal government in the form of domestic aid programs. However, during Mr. Wallace's administration as governor, Alabama received nearly twice as much federal aid as it had paid into Washington in federal taxes. Now, how can Mr. Wallace justify his continued attacks on federal aid policies when such a situation has existed in Alabama?
The answer to this is very simple. George Wallace feels that these things are wrong, but provided that they are going to continue, he is going to see that the people of his state get their fair share.
I see. Another question. If George Wallace is the working man's candidate, why did he, as governor of that state, reduce the state corporate taxes and raise Alabama's personal taxes, thus shifting the tax burden on the working man?
Well, sir, I'm not from Alabama, and I cannot comment too much on their tax structure. I can say this. I have had several conversations with many Alabamians, and I find that their tax rate is much lower than ours up here in New York.
Yeah, as comparatively. But, I mean, from what the Alabamians had before, and considering where Wallace could have gotten the money, he could have gotten the money from these corporations, but I assume in order to induce industry down there, he reduced that and increased these personal taxes. And what I'm saying is that, you know, how can he be in the working man's, how can the working man be his prime interest if he is going to raise their taxes when he didn't necessarily have to?
Well, I don't believe that the corporations in Alabama have any tax benefits except for those maybe to increase plant population in certain areas that need jobs. Now, Mr. Wallace himself has said many a time over nationwide television that there are tax-exempt institutions in this country and that they should be taxed, therefore lifting the burden from the working man.
Mr. Hammer,
yes.
I'm sorry, we're having some distortion on your line, so I'm going to disconnect. Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. Tonight, the presidency of George C. Wallace, our guest, Mr. Jim Rupp, the chairman of the Courage Party in New York, which is also the American Independent Party, which is, of course, Mr. Wallace's party. This time, we'll take a local call from New York. Mr. Gwenz is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. Mr. Gwenz?
Yes, I'd like to address my question to Mr. Rupp. On this thing on law and order, it seems that George Wallace, back in his early days, you know, when he was running for governor of the state of Alabama, was receiving a whole lot of support from white racist groups such as the KKK, and they still do support him. And I wondered, you know, how this man could run, you know, for law and order against, you know, crime in the street and what have you, and the civil insurrections that we've been having when they're still occurring in the South. And he doesn't seem to say anything about that.
I didn't get all of your question. I got the first part of it. And in reply to that, as far as I can say, George Wallace has denounced the Ku Klux Klan and any other organization of its type. Now, any more than that on your question, I didn't hear.
Let's see. The other part of my question was how did he feel towards the report on civil disorders that was put out?
The Kerner Commission.
Right.
Is that what you're referring to? Inferring to?
Yes, that was one, right.
Right. Well, he feels that the Kerner Commission was a hoax, again, put on by some of the liberal politicians in this country.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Okay.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Jim Rupp, and our conversation, the presidency of George C. Wallace, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and tonight's guest after station identification. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to tonight's Night Call guest. Call Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. from the West on area code 212-749-3357, and from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Mr. Jim Rupp, who has been kind enough to sit in for Mr. C.A. Tex Franklin, a Montgomery, Alabama businessman who's coordinating the Wallace for President activities in New York State. And I understand from Mr. Rupp that Mr. Franklin is now available. Mr. Franklin?
Yes, Dale.
First, we want to thank Mr. Rupp for doing a man-sized job for sitting in for you, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Franklin, we want to welcome you once again, and during the first portion of Night Call tonight, we had asked Mr. Rupp about many of the stands of Mr. Wallace in reference to law and order and whether or not the Wallace campaign was geared towards white racism. We also asked him about Mr. Wallace's feelings about the United Nations. Now, I think it would be best for us to kind of put you in the arena right away by asking you what Mr. Wallace stands for.
Well, I have his platform in front of me here, of which I'll not read. But there are many, many issues besides the ones that you've mentioned, such as peace abroad and domestic tranquility, which is what we feel is the two major issues right now. There are some 11 points to his platform that are led up. Local government, which is, we feel, is the state's rights segment. The right to private property. Job opportunities for the poor. We're very much in favor of helping those that are not physically able to help themselves. We feel that that a man is capable, that he should get out and earn his own way. As far as one big issue that keeps popping up is the labor union. Mr. Rupp, who was on just a little while ago, is a labor union member, and he speaks well of his co-workers in the labor unions. Education, again, we return to states' rights, that each state should have the right to govern their own schools. You get over into foreign affairs. Governor Wallace has said many times that the our foreign affairs should be handled by those countries who are willing to give aid to those, and by giving I mean if a country is willing to reciprocate with either arms or in money or this, that, and the other, we'll work with them. But we feel that they should carry their burden in the various countries. Like in Vietnam, we don't feel that we should have the sole responsibility of bearing the burden of the cost, the manpower, and things like this. Also feel that our allies should not deal with our enemies. But these are just a few of the points I'm hitting on real fast.
Mr. Franklin, we know that during the latter part of the campaign, many things are said, and I suppose that I think a gentleman we had on our show a couple of days ago from the Fair Practices Committee stated that the last 5 or 6 days before the election is kind of the witching hour. This is the time when the candidates kind of come out a little bit more broadly than before.
Right.
Now, we have noticed over the last couple of days that Mr. Wallace has been leveling attacks on the pollsters. I don't know if he mentioned Dr. Gallup and Mr. Harris, but he has mentioned the pollsters as well as the newspapers. He feels that he is not really getting a fair shake. What is your feeling about that?
Well, I'm not the only polls that I really see, of course, are what I read in the newspaper. But various and sundry people bring polls into us up here. I saw one in a local magazine the other day, or a little newspaper type thing, where Governor Wallace carried 50%. And I think Mr. Nixon had about 39, and the rest went to Vice President Humphrey. this and all over whenever, I'm sure you're familiar with some of the radio polls, so many of these have come out in favor of us. And, of course, personally, I have no way of knowing about the Gallup poll or the Harris poll, as you mentioned. So I couldn't really fairly say. I don't feel that I'm anyone. I've made no studies of polls or anything like this. So this is a pretty hard question to really answer.
Is Mr. Wallace running actually to win, or is this the preparation for a big thrust in 1972?
Well, when we started out in California, we didn't really feel that we had a chance to win. But we saw that the South was solidly behind us. We went to California and found so many people that were willing to change their registration from one party to another, an unknown party, that we felt like, well, maybe we do have some strength elsewhere. But then when we got on all 50 states' ballots, well, we knew we had a darn good chance. Now, I think when you ask whether we can win or not, I don't think we even know that what our true strength is until we do have an election. I think we have a tremendous silent vote.
Mr. Franklin, we have a number of callers standing by who would like to join our conversation, and we'll take our first call this time from Seattle, Washington. Mr. Hennish is hearing Night Call over KVOW.
Fine.
Mr. Hennish?
Thank you. Mr. Franklin?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to ask you two very brief questions. The first one, I believe Mr. Wallace considers himself to be a conservative. Is that correct?
Well, on national television not too long ago, he said that if helping raising the Social Security benefits, raising the amount of the income tax deduction from $600 to a dependent's portion to $1,000, he says if this makes him a liberal, then he's a liberal. But by most standards, we think of him as a conservative.
Well, if he is a conservative, I assume that he is familiar with perhaps the most well-known conservative of them all, Barry Goldwater, and I'm sure he's familiar with Strom Thurmond, who's a fellow Southerner, and I'm sure he's familiar with National Review magazine. All three of these conservative authorities have come out strongly against Mr. Wallace, and I'd like to quote just very briefly from National Review magazine. And Mr. John Ashbrook, who is a conservative Republican congressman from Ohio, Mr. Ashbrook says, except for the race issue, there is no reason why we could not have a Humphrey Wallace ticket this year, just as we had, for example, a Stevenson-Sparkman ticket in 1952. Between Humphrey and Wallace, aside from the race issue, there is actually very little philosophical difference. If anything, Wallace could even be an even more reckless spender and centralizer than Humphrey, if such a thing can be imagined. In a way, of course, it doesn't really matter that Wallace is not running officially on the Democratic ticket. In a very real sense, he is on that ticket. Wallace cannot win, but a vote for Wallace is not on that account wasted. It is really a vote for Humphrey. Without Wallace in the race, Humphrey would not have had the remotest chance of being elected president. Wallace will help Humphrey, much as Sparkman helped Stevenson. Now, I'd like you to comment on that, if you would, please, since it's by one of them, written in one of the leading conservative journals of opinion.
Well, first, that's one man's opinion.
Well, it is the opinion of not only Mr. Ashbrook, but obviously of the editors of National Review magazine, and Mr. William F. Buckley, Jr., who is perhaps the leading conservative intellectual in the country.
You'll get some debate on that, but here in New York, Mr. Buckley would not endorse, or the Conservative Party would not endorse Governor Wallace.
They certainly would not. They're Nixon backers.
Right. Now, in this state, when we were on our petition drive here, we found that we had more strength if you could categorize it, among the conservatives, some of our better workers were members, disenchanted members of the Conservative Party.
Well, my point, sir, is that perhaps Mr. Wallace has been misleading conservatives, because if the leading conservative intellectuals and their spokesmen and such conservatives as John Ashbrook and Strom Thurmond and Mr. Buckley and Mr. Goldwater have all come out against Mr. Wallace on the grounds that he is not a conservative, then perhaps Mr. Wallace should not call himself a conservative. He is really doing the conservative cause a disservice.
All right, Mr. The people up here, the conservatives, feel that they have been sold down the river.
Why they're all voting for Mr. Nixon.
Now, that's a pretty big statement, sir.
Mr. Hennish, yes, sir.
You have asked Mr. Franklin some questions, so let's give him a chance to answer,
sir. Yes,
sir. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Goldwater did run as the Republican, on the Republican ticket. Here in New York State, we have great strength among the conservatives, the rank and file, maybe not in the Buckley camp, but in fact, we have quite a few conservative clubs here who have turned their clubs into Wallace headquarters. So we feel that, and Strom Thurmond, who has, as you know, been in three different camps so far, I feel that,
Well, he's always voted as a conservative, has he not?
Pardon?
He has always voted as a conservative, has he not?
No, I'm not familiar with his voting record, sir.
Well, how do you answer the charge that there is no real difference on any issues except race between Mr. Humphrey and Mr. Wallace?
Well, to get into that, on law and order, Mr. Humphrey said that if he lived in a ghetto, he would be the first one to lead a riot, right? This is one thing. The war in Vietnam.
Would you say that a man who tries to disobey the law by defying federal law is a good example of law and order?
Who has done this?
Mr. Hennish?
Yes.
Who are you referring to that...
Well, Mr. Wallace, I believe, tried to lead resistance to federal law.
No,
did
sir.
Did he not?
Are you referring back to the schoolhouse stand?
Indeed.
Mr. Hennish, right. Mr. Hennish, I want to thank you for calling. We have to break for station identification.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir.
Goodbye.
Thank you, sir.
This is Night Call in New York. Tonight, the presidency of George C. Wallace. Our guest is Mr. C.A. Tex Franklin, who is coordinating the Wallace for President activities in New York State. We'll return to Mr. Franklin right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and tonight's guest, C.A. Tex Franklin, after station identification.
The year 2000 is a little more than a generation away. For our cities, the question is precisely this. Will the new millennium mark a celebration or a wake? If you think you can sit snug in a suburban split level while the cities slide downhill, you're only kidding yourself. Slums won't stop at the city line any more than commuters do. What happens to our cities happens to our suburbs. Together we can remake our cities. We will. We must. If you think there's nothing you can do to help, think harder.
Send for the free booklet, The Turning Point. Write Night Call, Pomona, New York. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in North America to New York State Campaign Coordinator C.A. Tex Franklin about why you should vote for Wallace for president. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. and from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And a welcome to the night call stations who join us every night for the second half hour. Tonight, our conversation is the presidency of George C. Wallace, and our guest is Mr. C.A. Tex Franklin, a Montgomery, Alabama businessman who is the campaign coordinator for Wallace for president here in New York State. And Mr. Franklin's calling in from New York City. This time we'll go out to Detroit, Michigan. Mr. Mackey is hearing night call over WJLB. Mr. Mackey?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Your question?
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Freeman. Well, first of all, I was...
Mr. Franklin.
Franklin, I'm sorry. Mr. Ruff said that Wallace was not a segregationist. And I'd like to know if Mr. Franklin thinks the same also.
Mr. Franklin?
What is your terminology of a segregationist?
Pardon?
What is your terminology of a segregationist?
Or a white racist, whichever term you prefer.
Pardon?
Or a white...
He interprets, Mr. Franklin, he interprets a segregationist as a white racist.
Well, no, certainly he's no white racist. He's done more for the Negro in Alabama and for both races.
No, that's not my question. I'd like to know, would you say he's a segregationist? Mr. Ruff said he wasn't. I'd like to know, do you think so or not before I ask my question?
Okay, no, I don't think he's a racist.
Well, then, can you justify his statement, segregation today, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever?
Well, this was a statement he made in Alabama. And being a state's writer, what he feels for Alabama is one thing. What he feels in the national level is another. When he made his inauguration, I happened not to be there at the time, but when he said this, he was talking about the state operating their own schools, and he said he wanted segregated schools, which we feel is a state's prerogative to control their schools.
Well, can I ask the question about education?
Yes, sir.
In the United States, educational standards differ from different areas.
Right.
In each area, it's different. In the South, it's particularly low. Therefore, somebody who goes to college for teaching, let's say, in the South, can come up here to Detroit and not be qualified as a teacher.
And not be qualified as a teacher?
That's right. This party will have to go to school and take more classes.
I don't feel so. I majored in education in college myself. And I don't feel I'd have any difficulty being accredited in any other state. It depends on the school that you go to that are accredited. And they go by the same standards in Alabama as any other state.
But the standards are different. Some states are higher than others.
Well, certainly. But certain colleges in each state are different than others, too, by their accreditation.
Did you attend school in Alabama, Mr. Franklin?
Yes, the University of Alabama.
Mr. Mackey, are you saying that there are certain schools in Alabama?
No, I said that education, the standards of education in different areas of our country differ.
Well, that's true.
And that if, like I gave him the example, if he went to school in Alabama, he wouldn't be qualified to teach in Michigan, just as somebody from Michigan might not be qualified to teach in California.
Well, what Mr. Franklin is saying, that he went to the University of Alabama and he had no problem or would have no problem in being accredited in other states. Now, perhaps there are some schools in Alabama that perhaps are not as high up on the educational ladder as the University of Alabama.
Right. Well, your elementary and your secondary schools fall into this category. We have a lot of schools in some sections that are a lot better than others, in the same city even. You might have some that have higher accreditation. This is done by your teachers and your faculty. They're the ones that rate your schools. If they have so many master's degrees and so many PhDs, this is where you get your accreditation.
Mr. Mackey?
Well, here in Detroit, we have Wayne State University, which is a highly accredited school. And I have a relative that graduated from Wayne, that went to California to teach it. He found he had to take more classes. And therefore, I feel that education should be placed on a federal basis so that everyone, no matter whom he is, gets an equal education and is accepted throughout the country.
Well, that's an opinion that you're offering, sir, but what is your question?
I want him to comment on this. He says that he's for states' rights. But in giving the state the right to govern education, he deprives the individual, the citizen.
Well, you're going off on a very broad area, but we'll try to get to it. Thank you, sir. Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York. The presidency of George C. Wallace is our conversation. Our guest, Mr. C.A. Tex Franklin, who is the coordinator of the Wallace for President campaign in New York. This time we'll go out to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mr. Potter is hearing Night Call over WPMJ. Mr. Potter?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Hi. Hello. Is this Mr. Shields?
Yes, sir, and Mr. Franklin's on the line.
Yes. Well, I came across a very short, hard-hitting little editorial today. I'll identify it when I read it. The title of it is Honest George. It says, when John Hatchett raised a storm at New York University by calling Richard Nixon Hubert Humphrey, and New York Teachers Union President Albert Shanker, quote, racist bastards, unquote, he remarked of George Wallace that, quote, at least he is honest about what he stands for, close quote. In New York Magazine, NBC's Douglas Kiker was quoted as describing Wallace as one who, quote, may be the only honest politician in the U.S. today, unquote. One of the many disturbing things about the Wallace candidacy is that even those most concerned about his role in bringing the pathological racist undercurrent of American culture to some level of respectability tend to accept the rationale of his appeal to the politically naive, that he tells it, quote, like it is, unquote, or at least as he thinks it is. It is not peripheral matter. It is not a peripheral matter. Millions of his voters will come from those who think that they are not racist, but are voting for some refreshing variety of political outspokenness. Conventional politicians are mealy-mouthed, which makes it easy for disgusted voters to equate tough talk with, quote, honesty, unquote. Wallace's political history follows the classic pattern of the demagogue. It is all in all its two-faced crudity. He started as a traditional Alabama populist, and as a racial moderate, until he decided he wouldn't be, quote, out-niggered, unquote, again. His record has been one of consistent chicanery and conniving. There exists not the slightest reason to believe that he would hesitate to take any position about anything that he felt would advance his chances of coming to power. Those who further the myth of Wallace's honesty with the vague notion that they are merely giving the devil his due are instead gratuitously contributing their dues to the devil, unquote. That's the end of the editorial from the New Republic of October the 29th, 68.
Now, what is the question, sir?
There's no question. I said that editorial questions his honesty by raising some important questions. The title of the question is Honest George, and I think it gets over fairly cleverly that the honesty isn't there, that it's a funny kind of honesty.
Well, and the only thing we have to base it on is the governor's record in Alabama. There was not one scandal whatsoever in his entire administration or that of his wife, Lurline. And we had people, the Attorney General of Alabama at the time was a bitter opponent of Governor Wallace, and he was the one that did most of the investigating. And had there been any thing in there, he certainly would have brought it to light had there been any type of scandal or dishonesty in the administration. So, and I find also, when you're dealing with thousands of people across the country, certainly you might find some dishonesty. I'm finding it here in New York. But this is going to be true in anything where you're dealing with volunteers in vast numbers. But as far as his administration or in the Wallace campaign, I don't think you would find any dishonesty, because this is something that was not tolerated when he was governor, or his wife. And I can't conceive of it.
Here's another small quotation that I found in the current review of this book called Wallace. Have you read it?
Which book is this?
The title of it is Wallace, I think. It's a current book. It's supposed to be out about Wallace. I think the author's name is somebody by the name of Frady. And here's just a short quotation. In an Alabama version in Frady of those conundrums of existence, a judge, after listening to Wallace, says, quote, "Well, goddamn, we at the bottom of everything you can find to be at the bottom of, and yet we gonna save the country. We lead the country in illiteracy and syphilis, and yet we gonna lead the damn country out of the wilderness," close quote. That's just one little quote from this current book.
Mr. Potter, thank you for calling, sir.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Mr. Franklin, would you care to comment?
Right. You want me to...
Yes, if you will.
Does that deserve reply? there are so many people that liberals and anarchists and all this writing articles now. I get stacks of it in the mail up here. People bring it in and this, that, and the other. That they come out with these half-truths. They come out with anything and everything because... Governor Wallace is being felt, he's being heard, and he's being supported by the people of this country. And if you want to call it stepping on toes of the old line established parties, well, he is definitely doing this. And I feel that most of these articles that we do see like this, now I'm not familiar with either one of them, but... there are so many slanderous things. I've seen some things against Mr. Humphrey, and I've seen some things against Mr. Nixon also that were mighty slanderous, and I'm just proud to be with the Wallace campaign that we have not ourselves printed any slanderous material.
Mr. Franklin, earlier when we first came on, we stated that Mr. Wallace had a great deal of appeal for the little people who like his stand. Is it the little people who are supporting Mr. Wallace?
Well,
financially?
By little people, we're talking about the middle income. By the little man who has gone to do a day's work, come home, enjoyed his family and his home. For the first time in his life, he is getting actively involved in politics. He's not happy with the way things have been running in the country. And he is, he's rising up in a manner where he is contributing money for the first time to a national campaign. He's supporting it, is volunteer work. And this is exactly where the Wallace strength lies, is in this working man who's being taxed. He's being... told where his children will go to school. He's being told who he can sell his house to and who not.
Has Mr. Wallace received much support from the John Birch Society?
Certainly. We've received support from a lot of organizations.
Has the John Birch Society been one of the big financial backers of Mr. Wallace's campaign?
Well, I think I'm not a Birch member myself, but I think from talking with some, that their first obligation is to the Birch Society. I think if they do give money, and I'm sure they do, I certainly hope they do, I would say that certainly we are receiving as from individuals of the Birch Society. I have no knowledge of any lump sums coming from any local chapters or organizations of the Birch Society.
Mr. Franklin will return right after station identification. This is Night Call in New York. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and tonight's guest, C.A. Tex Franklin, after station identification. tomorrow night on Night Call. The presidential candidate of the Socialist Workers' Party, Fred Halstead. The Socialist Workers are on the ballot in 20 states, and Mr. Halstead is the only presidential candidate in this campaign to have gone to Vietnam to talk to the troops. Halstead says the moral climate among our troops in South Vietnam, Japan, and in this country is ripening for a major anti-war movement in the armed forces. Syndicated columnist Murray Kempton says Halstead fits his own special middle-class bias in favor of revolutionaries who wear neckties and calls him the first candidate he's met who sounds like a real person. The presidential candidate of the Socialist Workers' Party, Fred Halstead, tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to New York State Campaign Coordinator C.A. Tex Franklin about why you should vote for Wallace for president. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And this time out to Portland, Oregon, Mrs. Hardy is hearing Night Call over KLIQ-FM. Mrs. Hardy?
Yes.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. Your question, ma'am.
Yes. When Mr. Wallace stood in the schoolhouse door, I understand he was upholding the laws of the Constitution of the state of Alabama. And my question is this. In your opinion, would Mr. Wallace be so dedicated to the upholding of the laws of the Constitution of the United States?
Yes, ma'am. Governor Wallace is one of the most learned men on constitutional government, I imagine, in the country. Really, he's dedicated his life to the Constitution. A lot of times he has had to comply with court orders that he felt were not in accordance with the Constitution. But yet he believes in law and order and justice, and he complied with it and decided that he would enter the campaign for President of the United States to see if he couldn't get some repeals on these laws that he felt was unjust. But he is definitely and always has been, and I feel certainly and most strongly that he will always remain a constitutional president.
Does Mr. Wallace's children attend integrated schools?
Yes, ma'am.
His son, I'm particularly thinking about.
Yes, ma'am. And I'm real familiar with his son because I live not too far from the school that he attends. And they are completely integrated, right?
Mrs. Hardy.
This is Mr. Wallace's choice?
Ma'am?
This is the choice of Mr. Wallace.
Well, he wants him to attend public schools. Now, I know, speaking personally, that if I had a choice to go to a completely integrated school or a white school, I would want my children to go to a white school.
Mrs. Hardy, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Tonight, our conversation, the presidency of George C. Wallace, our guest, Mr. C.A. Tex Franklin, the campaign coordinator for Wallace for president here in New York. This time out to Princeton, New Jersey, Mrs. Mintz is hearing Night Call over WRVR-FM. Mrs. Mintz?
Yes.
Good evening.
Mr. Franklin?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you not consider it contradictory that Mr. Wallace, who espouses repeatedly the return and or upholding of states' rights, to revert to a federal branch of the government, namely the Supreme Court, to intervene on his behalf in order to have his name appear on the Ohio ballot? How do you, a supporter of Wallace, reconcile this dazzling act on his part to intercept states' rights for his own purposes with his constant pronouncements against the federal government intervention for all other purposes?
Well, first, if we didn't have the Supreme Court, the Constitution, then any state could just arbitrarily secede from the union. Or they could say, well, this income tax law or certain laws of this nature, we will not pay them. So you have to have a working agreement between the states and to the Supreme Court and the other branches of the federal government. We have to have certain controls and things like this. The act of declaring war, well, one state might want to declare war and another one not. But as far as the Ohio Act is concerned, we appeal to the Supreme Court. The laws of Ohio were such that they did grant us a position on the ballot as a write-in candidate.
Don't you find that rather paradoxical in view of the fact that Mr. Wallace is constantly pronouncing against federal intervention? The reason I raise the question is because of Mr. Wallace's position when he stood in front of the schools in Alabama after the Supreme Court had determined that there shall be desegregation.
Right. He was making a point in the schoolhouse stand that his rights as the ex-officio president of the University of Alabama was being jeopardized, that the governor of the state had no say-so. Now, this is dealing with a state matter, actually, whereas when he was trying to get on the ballot, he complied with the state laws and met every requirement that the state laws said. So what other course is there to go to? Here in New York, we had the matter of the Shea Stadium. We took it to court. We won our court case, but they appealed. This will go to the various appeals court and could eventually end up in the Supreme Court or Court of Appeals in Washington. So we have to have the judicial system that we have. And as far as I know, depending on the people in the courts and all, I think we have a wonderful system.
Mrs. Mintz,
yes.
Thank you for calling.
May I just ask one little question further?
Yes.
Mr. Franklin?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
Yes.
You're on, Mrs. Mintz.
Hello. Mr. Franklin?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you just answer this one question? Is the Reverend G.L.K. Smith among the ardent supporters of Wallace?
I'm not familiar with the name.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much.
This time we're going out to Dunedin, Florida. Mr. Hines is hearing Night Call over WFLA in Tampa. Mr. Hines?
Yes, sir?
Good evening, sir. Your question.
Yes, this is Mr. Hines. I'd like to know one thing. How does Governor Wallace manage to talk for 30 minutes over TV in public 30 minutes or so without reading notes? Where Mr. Nixon and the rest of the candidates, every time you look at them, they've got to be reading everything off of paper.
This, I've always been told as a child that the best way to not get tangled up in your own feet is to tell the truth. I like to think this is exactly what Governor Wallace is doing, that he has his issues and his points. He has been condemned by the press as saying he gives the same tired old repeated speech. Well, it might be, but it's music. As many times as I've heard it, I still have goosebumps and enjoy and am thrilled to hear him say the things that I've been thinking personally for years. He uses a certain amount of notes. He has various and sundry things that he adds now that the election is progressing. His platform has widened. His scope, his knowledge, his advisors are adding more and more. That he does use a certain amount of notes. But basically, he speaks of convictions that he believes from the bottom of his heart. And by this, you don't need a lot of notes.
Mr. Hines, thank you for calling.
Then I have one other question. Do you think that Nixon refused to debate? Hello?
Yes.
You're on, sir. Go ahead.
I have one other question. Do you think that Nixon refused to debate Humphrey over the air, which was he had the time to do it, because he would then have to debate Wallace, and he was afraid if he'd debate Wallace, he'd lose everything by it? Is that the reason that he refused to debate Humphrey over TV?
Well, I can't speak for Mr. Nixon. I don't know personally what his reasons are. I do recall, and by his refusing to do so, happened to think back when he debated President Kennedy and the beating that he took there. I think that maybe he is afraid.
Well, that's what all of our friends and everybody, we sit over the house and we're
Mr. Hines,
the same thing that
Mr. Hines, thank you for calling,
afraid,
sir. This is NyCall in New York. We're sorry to cut Mr. Hines off. Please forgive us, but time just won't allow us. And Mr. Franklin?
Yes.
One wrap-up question we'd like to pose to you, if we may.
All right.
If the issue of race was not one of the vital issues at this point in our history here in America, would Mr. Wallace's popularity be as great as it is now?
Well, my personal opinion is it's not a race question, that it's strictly a matter of law and order. It's a matter of Vietnam, it's a matter of taxation, it's a matter of getting back to the constitutional government that this country was founded on. These are the things. Everyone wants to mention race. I personally have, I guess, as many Negro friends as anyone else, but and they are for Governor Wallace because they say that if they had a business and a riot broke out in a ghetto, I don't think a ghetto is a race-motivated thing. I think this is an economic thing that can be handled by, like we did in Alabama and are doing with trade schools, better education, to give these people the opportunity to earn their own and win their own self-respect and pride. But this is my personal opinion on this, that it is not a race election, you might say, or Governor Wallace's sole platform is on a racial issue.
Mr. Franklin,
yes?
thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Thank you, Mr. Shields.
Tonight on Night Call, our conversation has been the presidency of George C. Wallace. Our guest, Mr. C.A. Tex Franklin. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, the presidential candidate of the Socialist Workers' Party, Fred Halstead. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.